to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The corruption risk for state governments in Kansas and Missouri, pretty dang high, a new report tells us. The report from the Center for Public Integrity, Public Radio International, and other groups sets out to assess transparency, accountability, and the anti-corruption mechanisms in all 50 states. Here's the rub. Not a single state, not one, earned an A grade. Missouri and Kansas, neither even got a B. We'll talk about the report in just a moment. Later on this hour, a look at the Million Dollar Quartet with Elvis, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins. But first up, trouble in the state houses. With us today is Peter Hancock. He's a veteran political reporter in Kansas and a former state house bureau chief for Kansas Public Radio. Peter, nice to have you.
Good to be here, Steve.
Mike Sherry is the founder and executive director of the nonprofit Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting, which produces multimedia watchdog reports in Missouri and Kansas. Mike, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Glad to be here.
And also with us on the phone today are two of the Midwest's top political scientists. Burdette Loomis is with the University of Kansas. Bird, good to have you. Good morning.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Well, and George Connors with Missouri State University in Springfield. George, good morning to you, too.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, Bird, let's start with you. You know, lots of lousy grades across the country when it comes to accountability, transparency, and anti-corruption mechanisms in the state houses. How surprised are you by this, Bird?
I guess I'm not that surprised,
yeah.
And at the same time, I'm not really quite as alarmed as I think you might expect me to be, or that the developers of this report might expect me to be. I mean, honestly, I think they did a lot of things right. I think they talk about the conditions of possible influence of corruption. But they're really not getting at corruption itself. And as Peter noted, I think in his report on Kansas, even within the two-state region, even though you have some very similar two similar states here with similar grades, I honestly think the political culture regarding corruption in the two states is vastly different. So I think this report captures some things but misses a lot of others.
George Connor, what's your take on the report on the Missouri side of the state line? What'd you make of it?
Well, I guess I wasn't entirely surprised, like Burdette, not too surprised. And I do think that I would never say a culture of corruption, but there certainly is the potential of corruption. We saw the Supreme Court strike down the ethics law, even though some people refer to that as ethic light. I think Missouri is still a long way from closing those windows of opportunity that lend themselves to both lobbyists and legislators.
Mike Sherry, why don't you set the table for us here just a little bit? Oh, exactly, you know, what was the purpose of this project? What were you trying to find out?
Well, I mean, it was really trying to be one of the most comprehensive views of state accountability and transparency across the country. I think what the designers wanted, you know, a lot of these reports have looked at maybe one thing, what's the state of the open records or what's
right.
This was across 14 different categories. Not only was it was also qualitative. I mean, they hired reporters to go out and actually talk to people as opposed to maybe gathering data. So I think it was designed to be one of the most comprehensive looks around.
You know, when it comes to how you did your work, Peter, describe that for us. How did you go about evaluating these different categories in Kansas, which was your state here?
The survey asked two different types of questions. One was, in law, is there something in your state that does X, Y, Z? The other section was, in practice, do these laws really work?
Mm-hmm.
And as Mike said, there were like 14 different sections. You went through the judiciary, the legislature, the civil service, the executive branch, the insurance commission. They also looked at redistricting and reapportionment and how accountable that was. So basically, you document whether or not there is a law or a policy or a regulation that does a particular thing. And then you talk to various people or you research previous news accounts or whatever to find out how effective that law actually is.
Mm-hmm. So from your standpoint, fairly comprehensive.
It was fairly comprehensive. Yeah, I mean, it looked at all the different branches of government. there were some areas that it didn't necessarily look at that some people might consider significant in state government. But I think generally the way the questions were asked, those could be incorporated in. There were, for example, no specific questions about K through 12 education or higher education.
Mm-hmm.
But in other you could bring those in. And in fact, on the scorecard for Kansas, I did bring in a number of things about K through 12 and higher education.
Mm-hmm. Mike Sherry, who paid for this thing?
Well, it was basically three groups, Center for Public Integrity, which really pretty much took the lead, Public Radio.
A well-known group, by the way. Just I work with them doing what I do for a living. Yeah.
Right. They're they're one of the granddaddies of nonprofit investigative journalism, Public Radio International, and a smaller – I'm pretty sure Global Integrity is kind of an offshoot of Center for Public Integrity. But they were really sort of the – they've done these types of studies – internationally, and that was we sort of worked off their template.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, just in general, Peter, you know, how much corruption is really out there? I should point out that, as the report points out, that in Massachusetts, the last three House speakers were convicted of various charges of corruption. In Illinois, four of the last nine governors have gone to prison, if you can believe it. Missouri, of course, has had its share. Scandals have shaken more than half of the nation's state houses in the past decade. What do you think's going on out there?
It depends on your state. I mean, you say how much corruption is in your state, and part of the question that this project tried to answer is compared to what? I would say in Kansas, it's a fairly clean state. Traditionally, there's not a lot of corruption that might possibly be related to the fact that it's a small state and there's not that much money to be had in Kansas. But the culture generally has been pretty clean for the last several decades. And as one of the professors pointed out, this looked not only at the existence of corruption, but the opportunities for corruption. In Kansas, we respond when there are things that we consider to be a scandal.
Yeah.
The things that qualify as a scandal in Kansas might not even make page six news over here in Missouri, and certainly not in Illinois. I have friends and relatives in Illinois, and we joke back and forth about things that
different
are going
worlds.
On in that state. And it's a completely different world. So generally, I think Kansas is fairly clean. There are holes in certain areas of the law. There are gaps that present the opportunity for corruption and abuse. But there's not that much corruption and abuse. And absent a scandal that really brings those things to the public attention, Kansas kind of leaves well enough alone. It does respond, for example, and I'm sure you remember this from covering it, the Capers scandal from the early 1990s when there were investment losses. There were the famous scandal back in the 1950s, what was called the triple play, where a Supreme Court justice retires, and so the sitting governor resigns in his last week of office. The lieutenant governor comes in, serves 3-4 days in office, and his one official act is to appoint the former governor to the open seat on the Supreme Court.
Had not heard of that one.
From the 1950s. So there are things like that that kind of shock the conscience of people in Kansas that you know, might just blow right by my friends in Illinois and think, what do you think? So there are things like that. It's a fairly clean state, but generally, you know, there are holes and gaps in there that present opportunities.
Well, Burdette and George Conner, I got to tell you, and I think I've talked to both of you guys about this in the past. You know, as I travel back and forth between state houses in Topeka and Jefferson City, it's like going from the moon to Mars. They are two completely different places, different cultures, different attitudes. And I've got to tell you, like Peter Hancock just described, Burdette Loomis, Kansas is lily white, pure, pristine compared to the atmosphere in Jeff City. At least that's the way I've always taken it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a strain of political science looking at political cultures of the various states, and I think that by and large, Kansas would be more linked to a place like Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, more progressive states over the course of their history, and I think that. You got a couple things going in Missouri. You've got I think it's more of a Rust Belt state, more traditional, and there's a substantial Southern element. So I do think that you have some different standards. But this this report produces some surprises. Number one, New Jersey comes off as the least corrupt state in the country,
which is going to surprise people.
That is a little counterintuitive, and I think that it reflects. I think it reflects the laws, and one of the interesting things is they also talk about what happens in practice. So I think it means that New Jersey has cleaned up its act substantially. But to get back to your point, my sense is that the political culture in Kansas is historically quite different from Missouri's.
And George Conner, how would you describe the political culture in Jeff City?
Well, I think Bird hit it right on the head. Missouri has a historically what we would call an individualistic political culture. You know, what's in it for me? And then, as he said, coupled with a traditional culture from the South where, you know, you're sort of getting and keeping power is your main goal. And the goal isn't to do what's best for the citizens. And I do think that Kansas has that moralistic element. And, you know, it is in part the Rust Belt. We see historically in Missouri the Pendergast machine basically running the state. We see political machines in St. Louis as well. And that type of culture, I think, has dominated Jefferson City. And it doesn't help that we have a part-time, non-professional legislature.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that the report notes is, you know, the influence of lobbyists. And it's quite critical of legislators who, because of term limits, are shopping for jobs and invariably end up as lobbyists. But the downside or the upside, depending on how you look at it, is as a part-time, non-professional legislature, they have come to rely on lobbyists, not just for gifts and you know, the dinners and the meals that we all object to, but for information.
Yeah.
So they have come to rely on lobbyists to do the job that a legislator might do in some other state.
Hmm. You know, one thing that has always amazed me, and Bert and George, I'll stay with you guys on this, this notion that, you know, so many lawmakers go to Jeff City, go to Topeka, very well-intentioned. What amazes me about both places is that there's so much that could be done to sort of clean up government, to ensure that the government, that there are watchdogs out there who are situated to crack down on problems before they arise by giving the ethics agencies, for example, more power, more clout to conduct investigations. And yet, year after year after year, the rules remain sort of lax, not what they could be. Britta, why is that? Why don't lawmakers just change it and create a system that is pretty watertight when it comes to ethics and any influence, outside influence that shouldn't be there?
Now, I think that a lot of it is they really don't like, and this goes from the Congress on down, outside agencies investigating or overseeing their activities. I think they would much rather have it done internally. And so the Kansas Ethics Commission, for example, has long received fewer resources than it should have. It does not have subpoena powers. And so I think that legislators are perfectly happy with that. And I think that you see it in other ways as well. I think that if you look at campaign finance laws, they often are very slow to change them. And I think there is a fair amount of self-interest there.
But, you know, George Conner, there is so much doubt, so much skepticism directed at lawmakers from the general public. People are, you know, assume these guys are in it for themselves. Why don't they just clean it up in Jeff City and sort of end the argument once and for all?
Well, I think the report makes it very clear. It's at the end. It's the section called Blame the Victim. And the point that is made that Missouri doesn't have a public record-seeking culture. I mean, in some cases, the less we know, the better. I mean, we just don't want to know. It's that old joke about seeing sausage made. You know, but ultimately, I agree with Burdett. It's the legislators themselves have no interest in doing this. I mean, we had a chance to pass campaign finance and ethics laws, and it was, you know, by one of the authors of the bill, it was ethics light. And there has been at least one argument. I mean, the Supreme Court has since struck it down on a technicality, but there's an argument that has been made that it was passed knowing that it was going to get struck down on that technicality.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a history of doing that recently here in Missouri with the primary law. And so it's it's hurts the personal self-interest of the legislators to try and create and clamp down this. And people accuse the Jason Kander of proposing stronger ethics law, not because we want stronger ethics law, but because he's running for office. Hmm. And so there is a suspicion there, but it's not a suspicion that's going to turn into a groundswell of the people in Missouri that's going to have an impact on the legislature.
But George Conner, still, what you end up with in a state like Missouri is a state in which there are no campaign donation limits, a state in which special interests can give donations of $25, $50, $100, $500,000, and we've seen that in Missouri. Why do lawmakers allow that to continue? That just is inviting skepticism and criticism of the very place where they live and work every day.
Well, I think it goes back to what Burdette said, Mr. Hancock said with respect to scandals. I mean, as bad as it's gotten with Speaker Griffin, charges against Speaker Jetton and so on, it hasn't reached the level of outrage that we've seen in other places. I agree with you completely. I mean, I've often said the appearance of impropriety is just as bad as impropriety, but we've got lots of impropriety out there. But legislators unabashedly accept gifts and lobby, trips and meals and golf outings without any apologies whatsoever.
Yeah.
And until their individual constituents call them in the House district, in the Senate district, until those constituents get fed up, then nothing's going to happen.
Well, is that ever?
Could I add one quick thing here? Is that they did enact term limits, and that does virtually nothing except encourage people to get what they want more quickly.
Yeah.
And there'll be someone else to take their term. So I think a lot of times people say, "Oh, we'll do term limits, and this will really help things along." And there's no indication that occurs at all.
You know, Peter Hancock,
right.
You've covered the legislature in Kansas for Kansas Public Radio. Is there any chance that average citizens are going to rise up and demand wholesale reform here, short of having a scandal that brings down half the legislature and the governor himself?
If you'd asked me that question 5 years ago, I would say no.
Right.
5, 10 years ago. And polling numbers brought this out, that people were fairly satisfied with the governor and they were fairly satisfied with the legislature.
Yeah.
I think the culture has shifted in recent years, a great deal of dissatisfaction with government generally from top to bottom. But I don't see a groundswell from the grassroots that there's great dissatisfaction with gifts and concert tickets and baseball tickets or whatever. They care about what comes out. It's outcomes-based evaluation. They care about what comes out. Did my taxes go up? But did my road get paved? As long as the government is meeting the basic needs, people are satisfied with however it gets done, as long as it doesn't offend the conscience on a grand scale.
You know, Mike Sherry, I have the sense that people who live in Kansas City, whether on the Kansas side of the state line or the Missouri side of the state line, I mean, Jefferson City might as well be in Baltimore. It's so far away. Topeka might as well be in Taiwan. People just don't have any connection to it. It's a different planet, a different solar system. And they don't really think much about it ever.
Well, that's true. And I think that whether it's just part of the culture of Missouri or whatever, and, you know, people might accuse Jason Kander of grandstanding. But the way I see it is you're not going to energize your political base by running around the campaign trail saying, "I'm going to clean up Jeff City."
Right.
And there's just few people like Jason Kander who believe strongly about governmental ethics and want to talk about it and do something about it. There's just, the calls coming into their offices aren't clamoring for the General Assembly to be subject to the open records law.
Yeah.
They're perfectly happy with policing themselves. Who wouldn't be?
Mm-hmm.
What I think one of the things that came out of this study, I read a lot of the different stories, is that, a lot of this stuff, a lot of these, that's why New Jersey is number one. They've had so many scandals that they've, had to enact laws, but
they've enacted laws to crack down on this stuff so it doesn't happen again. So that's
right.
Why New Jersey, much to the shock of everyone across the country, is number one in your study.
Right. I mean, it's so often these reforms are in reaction to huge, large-scale scandals in Missouri. I think to me the I mean, the most poignant thing is that what everybody talks about, you know, in terms of scandals in Missouri is Griffin. Well, he was convicted in 97. Pled guilty. We haven't had that. We haven't had these, you know, large ongoing problems.
If you're just joining us morning. Go ahead, George. I'm sorry.
But let me just jump in 1 second. I mean, the one thing that Missouri got an A in was the internal auditing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we're going to see a turnaround here in Missouri, it's going to come from the auditor's office, you know, formally. I mean, we saw it with Monty. We see it with Schweik, the violations of the Sunshine Law. I mean, the fact that the Sunshine Law doesn't apply to the legislature. But, you know, we had a big, here locally, you know, an audit of Bolivar, an audit of the Springfield school system. Each one of these things reveals a certain level of bad management, bad practices, financial, and so on. And as the auditors go from town to town, school district to school district, that's where that groundswell might come from.
Yeah. What grades, Peter Hancock, did you all give to Kansas and Missouri? Let's start with you in Kansas. Where did Kansas come out here?
Kansas came out with an overall C.
Mm-hmm.
And it ranked about, I think, 9th in the nation.
So a high rank.
It was actually a fairly high rank, what you might consider a low grade, but given the fact that nobody got an A and only about 5 states, I think, got a B, coming out with a C relative to everything else was not that bad.
Mike Sherry, Missouri came out where?
15. It was tied with Alabama and Louisiana with a score of 72.
So a grade of C?
Yes.
C minus.
Straight C. No, C minus. C minus.
Yeah. Okay. And how did you guys evaluate each state's ethics agency, the agency that's in charge of so much of what we're talking about today, which is transparency and accountability in state governments across the country? How did the Kansas Ethics Agency come out in your report, Peter?
I think it came out fairly well. Mm-hmm. The Kansas Governmental Ethics Commission has gone through a couple of different morphing processes from one thing to another. It gets pretty regular funding. It doesn't have its own funding stream, so it's dependent on the legislature.
Which means if it ticks off the people it's supposed to be in charge of, it could see its funding cut, which strikes me as not a very good way to do business.
There is that potential. And they are responsible for a lot of things. They not only monitor, you know, enforce the state's governmental ethics laws. They have to monitor and audit campaign finance reports.
Right.
They have to issue advisory opinions. Occasionally, they have to levy fines. So they have a great deal of responsibility. The members of the commission are appointed by elected leaders, but they have a professional staff. And Carol Williams, I'm sure you've spoken to a number of times, is highly professional, and she keeps a strong professional staff underneath her. And so they do a pretty good job. They do a very good job with the tools that they are given. And now, one of the things, and this question came up in the survey a number of times, is are these reports audited? Are the asset disclosure statements audited or the campaign finance statements audited? They will go through and audit some campaign finance statements, but in terms of asset disclosure statements, they can't because they don't have access to individuals' tax records. And that's a policy choice that the state can make.
Asset disclosure, you're talking about individual lawmakers' assets, or what are you talking
lawmakers
about?
Lawmakers as well as state officials. Mm-hmm. Kansas requires asset disclosure statements from a pretty broad category of people.
Right.
I can tell you when I was a university employee at Kansas Public Radio, I had to fill them out. And when I was a state employee at another agency, I had to fill them out. So we do require asset disclosure. They're not audited necessarily. There might be some instances where somebody will look up another person's disclosure statement and say, well, they left this off or left that off. But pretty much, I mean, you fill out the form, you file the form, you've complied with the law, and that's about as far as it goes.
Burdette Loomis, to what extent do lawmakers in Topeka will walk in fear of a Kansas ethics agency?
I don't think that they're walking in fear at all. I think they have some healthy respect for it. Certainly Carol Williams has done a great job over there with modest resources and modest powers over the years.
How would you change it, Bird?
I think I would give them subpoena power. I think that I would allow them to undertake investigations on their own. I think that, as with the
with the post audit, legislative post audit, which got some very good scores and then some zeros in this report.
Mm-hmm.
I would make it I would bolster their independence, make sure that they got an independent stream of funding, and on something like lobbying, I would certainly allow them or beef up the laws so you would have more disclosed, and there would be, you know, more material for the Ethics Commission to work with.
Right.
So I think a lot of the constraint, and this goes for post audit as well as the Ethics Commission, is the constraints that are placed upon these watchdog groups by the legislators themselves.
How about the Missouri Ethics Agency, Mike Sherry? How did it come out in your report?
Well, I mean, just on a pure letter grade, it got a C-. But, I mean, I would really echo everything that Peter and Burdette said. And it's almost the exact same situation in Missouri. I mean, Julie Allen was very, very patient and very helpful for me in filling it in working through these questions. They are completely inundated with other things. I mean, I just pulled up my story noted an August 2011 report by the Missouri State Auditor that talked about all the things that, you know, not only do they have to monitor campaign finance, but they had approximately 1,100 monthly lobbyist reports to look at, 9,000 annual financial disclosure reports, and 18,000 campaign finance disclosure reports in election years.
Yeah. George Conner, how would you reform the Missouri Ethics Agency? What does it need that it doesn't have, in your view?
Well, I think Burdette pretty much said it all, and so did Mike. I think it's important to note that the law that was just struck down by the Supreme Court included two things that I think would be necessary. One is a little bit more proactive powers on the part of the Ethics Commission, and they also restricted the donations between committees. I mean, one of the things that gets really it's a shell game with, you know, who's giving money to what campaign and what candidate and who controls that, and the bill that was struck down put some limits on that. And this has been a bit of a partisan debate here in Missouri. The Republicans will argue for transparent, no limits, but transparency so that everybody can see what's going on. And the Democrats were much more likely to favor campaign limits. But I think in this election cycle, none of those things are going
to
happen.
Well, George, to what extent are you holding your breath that the Missouri General Assembly this year will say, look at this report and say, by George, it's time to tighten up the rules in Missouri and give the Ethics Agency a little more power to do what it has to do?
I don't think it's going to happen in this election cycle. I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime.
to be blunt, right?
Yeah, just to be blunt. Yeah.
Even with this report coming out saying there's a potential for corruption in Missouri as a result of lax standards, you don't see that changing?
No, I do not. No.
Burdette Loomis, how about you in Kansas?
No, very little chance, particularly given the immense legislative agenda this year, and you know, I think that, you know, this is a great report. It has this comparative aspect to it. It is comprehensive, as Peter and Mike have noted. It goes across a whole array of areas. It does leave various things out. There's nothing that I saw in the campaign finance stuff, for example, on outside groups, which is going to, I think, in Kansas this year is going to be an immense problem, an immense issue, and traceability of money. The other thing is, I think that there is an assumption that transparency is some kind of panacea. And honestly, you go back I've never seen a campaign won or lost on transparency in terms of reporting of contributions. I don't think people care very much. Now, I do think, and this is crucial, that with more transparency, there would be more opportunities for journalists to write stories. But given the decimation of the press corps in state capital after state capital across the country, even if they had that information, as Mike was just pointing out, all the different, you know, reports, even if they had that information, there's no sense that there's the person power to do it, which is why you end up with reporting stories like this coming from new sectors of the journalistic world.
Yeah.
So I think that, but I do think that, that if you had a stronger press corps or some kind of operation where you had some kind of ProPublica kind of operation in conjunction with journalism, that you might well have transparency would produce benefits. But I'm really not holding my breath.
Just briefly, in the few seconds we have left here, Mike Sherry, Peter Hancock, you guys did these reports from Missouri and Kansas. What else in the report from Kansas, Peter, would you highlight as something that maybe folks should be aware of?
The fact that we still have an elected state insurance commissioner and all of the employees in the insurance commission's office serve at the pleasure of that elected state official. I would also point out kind of an interesting difference here between Kansas and Missouri when Mike was talking about the auditor's office in Missouri. Missouri has an independently elected auditor. Kansas has an auditing division that is completely under the control of a legislative committee. So the Missouri auditor can go out and do audits. And, you know, when Claire McCaskill was there, I mean, it's been a source of some really interesting news stories. In Kansas, the auditing division does what the legislative committee tells it to do. It doesn't have the authority to just go out and do independent audits.
Do you think the auditor should have some more independence?
Some more independence in that auditing office, I think, would be helpful.
The criticism in Missouri, though, is that the auditor is elected, so you have a Democrat or Republican.
And it can, therefore, become very political.
Yes, right. Yeah. So that's the issue,
I guess. Which do you want?
Mike, what would you point out in Missouri?
Well, I think I'd piggyback off the discussions about transparency. I mean, one of the most enlightening things to me about this whole report or my work was, you know, some people say that this discussion about transparency and lifting the campaign limits and giving more transparency is just sort of lip service. But with a little bit of, you know, computer savvy and you as a Missouri citizen, if you go on that election commission or Missouri Ethics Commission website, or if you choose to get an asset disclosure form, there is a lot of transparency information right at your fingertips.
Yeah. We're going to leave our conversation right there. I want to thank Peter Hancock, who now publishes the Kansas Education Policy Report. Peter, thanks for your time today.
Good to be here.
Mike Sherry, founder, executive director of the nonprofit Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting. Mike, always good to have you.
Thank you.
Burdette Loomis from KU, George Connor from Missouri State University. Thank you both as well for taking some time.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, the Million Dollar Quartet. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.